Well, it's that time again, and the doctor is in. Yeah, this is Dr. Bill, the computer curmudgeon, coming to you once again this week with all kinds of geeky goodness. Oh yeah, we got a full show today. My, there's just so much to do. I don't know how we're going to get to it all. But I tell you what, we're going to give it our best shot. Yes, indeed. This is Saturday, July the 15th as I record this. And, of course, it is Dr. Bill, the computer curmudgeon, the podcast number 45, for those of you that are keeping score. And I tell you what, oh, my, we've just got so much I want to get to. I hope that I can get to it all in the time we have allotted. We're sure going to give it a shot. Let me say, first of all, that Senator Ted Stevens, you remember we played him last week, stumbling around trying to explain what the internet was, and he, shall we say, he made a fool of himself, and he has gained notoriety. I mean, this is just mushroomed. It's gotten out of control. There are people now making t-shirts that says the internet is a series of tubes. There are geek hats that have quotes from the senator, but one thing that I found was an MP3 put together by Paul Holcomb, a individual that I don't know, that's just out there somewhere in the vast expanse of the internet, that has put together a song. And he has taken Senator Stevens and made him DJ Rappin' Ted, and he is going to share with us, "The Internet is a Series of Tubes."
The Internet. Your geophobic density, if you will. It's not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. The other day got internet was sent by my staff at 10 o'clock in the morning on Friday. I got it yesterday. Tangled up tubes. Because he got tangled up with all these things that are going on the internet commercially. I think it's absolutely essential to provide streaming stuff going on the internet. The tubes. Fiber optic network tubes. I don't have to have that kind of speed. I don't think anyone here has defined what net neutrality is. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. And here we have this one situation. 10 movies streaming across that internet. We are saying that they cannot. I think it's absolutely essential. In the center, whether you realize that, you're asking for regulation for massively invading this world of the internet.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry. I thought you were finished. I'm sorry.
No, I'm not finished. But when we take fiber optics, really indicate that. Anyone that wants to use this system for massive commercial purposes, those tubes can be filled, tangled up tubes. The internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. Why did we do that? Why? Enormous tubes. Massive, massive. massive tubes. It really is the Internet consumer bill of rights. Because you got tangled up with all of these things and going on the Internet commercially. The world has turned against this. Your own personal Internet. That is you and me. You and me. Tubes. The Internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck.
Yeah, it's a series of tubes. Oh, bless his darling little heart. Senator Stevens is just so completely clueless that it's entertaining. Sad, but entertaining. The man is chairman of the Commerce Committee, and he stumbled around trying to explain why he voted against net neutrality. Now listen, this is funny, I know, in one sense, but it's also sad because there's a tremendous misunderstanding about net neutrality and what it is, and there's not a lot of time left. So if you have any concern about this, and I trust you do, if you're listening to this podcast, you are benefiting from net neutrality. So go to savetheinternet.org. I'm typing it in as I'm telling you this. And I misspelled it, and so it didn't go anywhere. I put two I's. There's only one I in internet. There it is. Savetheinternet.com. Go there and check it out. And do what they say. There's a thing that says Act Now, a little button at the upper left-hand corner. Click on that button. Do what you can to save the Internet, to vote for net neutrality. And there's all kinds of things going on. A lot of it has to do with songs that have been written. I tell you, I was just looking at this thing here. Here's another one. The Ted Stevens Internet Fan Club.
Internet is a series of tunes. You know, the other day got an internet was sent by my staff at 10 o'clock in the morning on Friday. I just got it yesterday. Why? Why?
Now, this is a little folk song that somebody wrote. Posted it on MySpace.
Because it got all tangled up with all these things going on the internet.
And I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time playing these songs, but basically, the song was posted on MySpace. It was taken down because, basically, of politics. And then it was finally reinstated. And basically, MySpace came back and said, well, it was a mistake. It was a mistake. But I'm telling you, this thing is getting out of hand. People are just going nutty. And the reason, a lot of the reason is, now I'm kind of, it was funny, but I'm also kind of getting a little serious about this. The thing is, there's so much money in the telecom industry, lobbyists that are pushing for legislation that will destroy net neutrality. And it's just us little guys out here that are actual users of the internet that are fighting for net neutrality. We don't have any money behind us. So go to savetheinternet.com. Savetheinternet.org will take you there too, as I found out. But savetheinternet.com and check out what you can do to help save net neutrality. Let's keep the internet free. Let's keep it neutral and not in the pocket of big business. And, you know, like I said last week, I am pro-business. I mean, you know, I am a conservative Republican, but I am for net neutrality because I'm for freedom of speech. I'm for individual freedoms to express what you want to express on the Internet. And so, well, anyway, don't get me started. A true curmudgeon. Don't get me started on that. Anyway, all right, let's go to our post this week. Like I said, I don't know how we're going to get it all in. We've just got a whole lot to talk about. This one post is called How Email Relaying Works. Now, email relaying is an issue that can get kind of technical, okay? And when you have to explain something like this to somebody, it can be frustrating because there are technical issues involved, and if you're talking to a non-technical person, then how do you get them to understand it? Now, I know that the people that listen to Dr. Bill the Computer Curmudgeon tend to be tech-savvy, you know, types that can really get a hold of these things. But we've got a few people out there, I'm sure, that are listening that, you know, maybe they just listen to the geek culture and they enjoy the humor and all that, and they're not quite as technical, not quite computer geeks, you know, as some of us are. But I just had, a situation where I had a customer of mine who was having problems with their email, and they were setting it up incorrectly, and I'd explained it to them, and they just weren't getting it. So finally, I just sat down and wrote a little missive that told it in the form of a story that hopefully they could get. And you know, they read it, and I told them, I said, you know, I hope this isn't over the top. I don't want you to be offended by this, but read this and see if it makes more sense. And they wrote back and said, wow, I got it. And they fixed it, and everything started working great on their end. So apparently it worked out. So let me quickly read this to you. I just want to read you the whole story. Basically, here's what I sent out. I said, okay, here's how it all works. A user has an internet service provider that provides the wire to their house. For clarity, we'll call this company ISP.com, Internet Service Provider. They're the ones that you pay for your DSL or broadband connection. In my case, for instance, I have a broadband connection provided by the Piedmont Triad Roadrunner Division of Time Warner. So ISP.com provides service to you. You're in their cloud of domain security, and they by default trust you as one of their own. It is a cozy, happy relationship. As far as ISP.com is concerned, your house and your PC are on their network, and they allow you to send and receive pretty much what you want to and from them. Now, outside of ISP.com, there are other ISPs, other companies, and other network services. These folks are outside the friendly confines of ISP.com. ISP.com does not trust these other companies, and sadly, they shouldn't. There are too many bad guys out there to lower your guard. I've often said that the internet's like the old Wild West days. You have to carry a six-shooter with you to protect yourself from the guys in black hats. Now you, a member of the ISP.com community, contracts with an outside vendor to provide business email, like me. We call this company, or we will call this company mail.com. See, I'm providing this person with their email account under their domain name, which is hosted at my hosting company. So we'll call them mail.com. Mail.com has its own DNS, infrastructure, email servers, firewalls, and it too has a responsibility not to trust anyone outside of its cloud of influence. Mail.com trusts you as a customer, but Mail.com doesn't trust ISP.com, and ISP.com doesn't trust Mail.com. Rather than being a bad thing, in computer and networking circles, this is business as usual, since both companies know that the rules are, if I can't control it in my own data center, then it is not to be trusted. Mail servers have an ability called relaying that allows one trusted source to relay mail to another trusted source. Relaying is only turned on within a network owned by the vendor that controls it. For instance, Mail.com may have four servers sending mail behind their firewall and within their own data center. Among this big happy family, these servers may be set to relay mail to each other all day long, but Mail.com would never open a relay to ISP.com, and ISP.com would never open a relay to Mail.com. On the internet, these mail servers are called open relays, and as soon as they're found, they are blacklisted as spamming servers, or they're isolated in other ways to be sure they don't become carriers of all the ills of the internet, like viruses, spam, malware, etc. No one wants to be found to be an open relay server. Aside from the fact that it's bad computer management, it opens up abuse problems and is just plain dumb. and other computer geeks think that the company that does this is clueless and should be sent back to Networking 101. They also poke fun at them in dark, shady corner geek bars and have a laugh at their expense. So what is a customer to do? He, you in this case, is stuck between the two Wild West gunslingers that don't trust each other. However, Mail.com trusts you as its customer, and ISP.com trusts you as its customer. So you can receive mail from Mail.com, and you can send mail from ISP.com. Therefore, you have to set up your mail client so that incoming mail is sent to the email server at set to the email server at Mail.com. Outgoing mail is set to the email server at ISP.com. In this way, you can both send mail out because ISP.com trusts you. You're in their network, after all, and you can receive mail sent in to insert your personal domain here.com, which is, of course, his domain, because Mail.com trusts you as a customer and will gladly send your client email destined to you. So now, let's drop back to the real world at my house for real, for instance. My ISP is Roadrunner. So I would have my home email set to send out via Roadrunner, but I would have my receive server set to drbillbailey.net, since that's my personal domain. So my email client would be set to SMTP outgoing server to smtp-server.triad.rr.com and SMTP or POP3 incoming as mail.drbillbailey.net. Now, since I'm within the Roadrunner world, I don't even need a password to relay off the local to me Roadrunner email server. However, I do need a username and password to connect to my personal account at drbillbailey.net. So what you'll need to do is this. Be sure that your email client is pointing toward your ISP's SMTP server for outgoing SMTP traffic and to the email server at insertyourpersonaldomainhere.com server with your username and password for the incoming mail. This should clear up any problems. Sorry for the long story, but I found that it helps to get the underlying concepts when setting these things up. And like I say, the happy ending of that story was that he got it, he set it up, and the mail started working the way it was supposed to. So it was a client-setting issue on his end that was the problem. And typically, that's what happens in these kind of cases. See, he figured, well, I'm getting my email from, you know, drbillbailey.net servers, so why not just set them both to that? And the thing is, it just won't relay outside of his ISP, and that's a good thing. That's not a problem. It's working the way it's supposed to, but you've got to be aware of this. Particularly, now see, here's the situation. Let's say that you go connect to somebody else. Let's say you go to somebody's house and they have wireless, and they allow you to connect your laptop through their wireless system. Well, now you need to find out who their ISP's email server is to set your outgoing email to that ISP's email server, because now you're in their cloud of influence. So that's something you need to be aware of if you're going to be hopping around visiting other people. And, you know, you say, oh, man, Dr. Bill, that is just so technical. Man, I don't have to keep up with that. Hey, if you want it to work, you're going to have to do it this way. Or, and here's a big or use web-based email, which is what I personally do all the time. There, that way, I don't have to care where I am because I'm using a web-based email client on one of my own servers, which is actually using Squirrel Mail. Squirrel Mail is a tremendous email client that I really recommend to you, squirrelmail.org. If you've got your own personal Linux server, hey, install Squirrel Mail, you will be in good shape because it's very safe, it's very quick and easy, and it works great. And you can use it anywhere because you're going to your website no matter where you are. It's all going through port 80, and it's all good. All right. All right, well, that was a long segment, but I trust you got something out of it, and it's beneficial for you. Let's move on to the next item. Firefox web browser use in the U.S. passes 15%. Yay! All right. What that means is excuse me, Microsoft Internet Explorer is losing market share. That's a good thing because Internet Explorer is a dog of a browser and will get you in trouble. So Firefox web browser use passed 15%. That is awesome. All right. Microsoft warns of 5 critical security flaws. This is a big one. There's been a lot of security issues, as usual, with Microsoft lately. And these are 5 big ones. These are ones that will basically allow someone to take over your whole computer. So you need to do the latest patches. As soon as you get them in, patch your computer. All right. Next item. Microsoft is fined by the EU for defying the law. The EU said, Microsoft, you are engaging in monopolistic practices. Wow, big revelation. And they said, here's what you've got to do. And they lined out exactly what they were supposed to do. Now, there were 2 areas. One was on the server side. One was on the client side. It had to do with their media player. And the one thing was is that the EU said, you've got to make it easy for people to have a different kind of media player installed on their personal client computer system. Microsoft said, yeah, okay, we'll do that. But then on the other side of it, the EU said, you've got to also open up your media server technology so that competing companies can see how to get into Windows and use it as a media server. And Microsoft basically said, they just didn't open that up, and they kept dragging their feet. And so now the EU is fining them 281 million euros. Now that's roughly $350 million. And they're talking about additional fines every day until they finally comply. So Microsoft has been bad. And apparently the EU is continuing to slap their little hand over it. All right, another survey came out this week that was really weird and interesting. It was about the internet and its usage. And the survey found that internet users that use podcasts, which is you because you're listening to this podcast, internet users that listen to podcasts tend to be, and this is statistically, of course, tend to be Trekkers or Mac users. Well, I don't have a Mac, but I'm kind of partial to Macs. Remember, it wasn't that long ago I was debating whether to get a MacBook Pro for a laptop or another laptop, and I ended up going with an HP Pavilion 5000 series laptop with Media Center Edition, which I'm really enjoying. Matter of fact, I'm using right now. But I came real close to going with Mac, and Trekker, yes, indeed, I am a big-time Trekker. Big-time Trekker. So, seems like their survey has kind of hit me right on the head. What about you? Are you a Trekker? Are you a Mac user? Because they're saying that a very large percentage of people that listen to podcasts are either Trekkers or Mac users. Very interesting. Don't know if it's true, but it's very interesting. All right. Geek Software of the Week. Now, you know I love sharing Geek Software of the Week with you, and some are geekier than others. This one's a little geeky, okay? I'll just set it up this way. It's a little geeky this week. This software is called Tidy UI. Now, you know that a UI is a user interface. A GUI, or GUI, as it's sometimes pronounced, is a graphical user interface. Well, this in this case, TidyUI is a user interface for the WC3's HTML Tidy libraries. Now, what in the world is that, Dr. Bill? Well, it's like this. The WC3 is the World Wide Web, there's the 3, consortium. They are kind of the people who set standards and, you might say, the keepers of the internet, all right, in the World Wide Web specifically. And so they are the ones that set standards like HTML code, which is the code behind the web pages that you see on the internet. Now, the thing is, if you're an HTML coder, it's easy to have tags that are what we call unbalanced. That is, you put a tag at the beginning, and web browsers tend to be kind of forgiving. If they see a tag at the beginning and then you have something that tag modifies, it will kind of assume you meant to close the tag and will move on. And it's okay. which is a good thing, because there's a lot of people out there, like me sometimes, that will leave the closing tag off because I just forget and I move on. I've got other things to do in that code, you know. So what HTML Tidy does is it allows a program to programmatically go in and look at the code and say, well, hey, here's a tag that wasn't closed, so I'm going to put the closing tag, and oh, by the way, you shouldn't have had that, and fix the code so that it's nice and clean. Now, here's the thing about HTML code. Clean code executes faster. Even though the browser is kind of forgiving and will kind of overlook some of those errors, it'll still have to kind of go, huh, what, and think about it. And it slows it down a little bit. And you want your code to be clean. You want your code to be fast. Now, in true geek fashion, the WC3 released these libraries and basically said, well, here they are. And oh, by the way, here's a little command line thing that you can process your pages with. And a lot of people just don't want to fool with command lines anymore. Hey, I'm down with that, okay? You know, you want a graphical user interface. You want a user interface that's Windows-y that you can use that tool with. So, a guy wrote a UI, a user interface for HTML Tidy. Therefore, Tidy UI. Hey, makes sense. All right, so what you do, you go to Tidy UI, you download the file. Now, the thing is, it's still pretty geeky. It doesn't have its own little run setup and it automatically installs. You have to download the file, unzip the file, place the contents of the zip file somewhere you can locate it again, like I gave the example of C program files, Tidy UI, then create a shortcut to the tidyui.exe file. Okay? Click on that shortcut and bloop, you have a graphical user interface that will allow you to select that poor example of HTML coding and process it by clicking on Tidy, and voila, you have clean, pure HTML code that will run very efficiently on the web. Good stuff. Now you may say, man, Dr. Bill, I don't program in HTML, I don't code. If I did, I'd use WYSIWYG Editor. Give me a break. Well, hey, for those slightly more geeky guys out there with the propellers on their heads, that's for you, okay? True geek software of the week. All right. Microsoft confirms a PowerPoint zero-day attack. Now, I've explained to you before what a zero-day attack is. That's when, boom, somebody comes out with something. There's no fix for it. There's no patch for it. There's no security, you know, tool to stop it. It's just there, and it's going to cause problems. 0 day. Boom. It's there. All right. Microsoft confirms a PowerPoint 0 day attack. Word had one. Excel had one. Now PowerPoint's got one. We're talking all in the last few weeks. People have been busy out there compromising Microsoft software, which is not hard. This is not very good software. Anyway, the latest attack exploits a previously undocumented flaw in Microsoft PowerPoint, the ubiquitous presentation manager used by millions of users around the world. The attack comes just days after Microsoft's July patch Tuesday and closely mirrors the situation in June when a zero-day Excel attack, excuse me, hate it when that happens. Your throat kind of gets all froggy. At any rate, closely mirrors the situation in June when a zero-day Excel attack was discovered 24 hours after patch day. Bad news for Microsoft. It just keeps getting bad for Microsoft. Wow. Well, guess what? I'm just about out of time. I've just got a few minutes. Well, actually, I don't even have a few minutes. I'm truly out of time, but I'm going to take a few minutes because, after all, it is a podcast, which is good, and tell you about a new feature of the website, and that is Geek Projects. This is our first Geek Project, how to make your PC look more like a Mac. Now, I know a lot of people have things that are out there about how to do this, but I just got intrigued by this particular piece of software called RK Launcher. It's awesome. I really like it. It's very clean, very fast. Actually, now this is strange, but it seems to me, and I may just be bowled over by how cool it looks, But it seems to me that programs launched through RK Launcher launch faster than through Microsoft's regular interface. I don't know why that would be. Probably isn't true. Probably just me. But it looks kind of like it does execute faster. So check it out. I've even got a picture of my laptop screen, and you can tell again that I'm a Trekker because, yeah, there's the Enterprise. But you can see that what I've done is I've installed RK Launcher, which gives you that little, you know, launcher bar at the bottom that when you hover over it, they get bigger and smaller as you go through the little thing, and it looks just like a Mac does. It's very cool. And I played around with it, and I thought, hey, I'll just share the exact steps that I took to do this, and maybe people enjoy that as a geek project. So check that out and enjoy. Well, I tell you what, we've gone over time, but I just want to take the time to give you that geek project because I think it will be something fun for you to do. Try it. You will like it. All right, well, I tell you what, we're going to get ourselves out of here. But once again, remember, the Internet is a series of tubes. Make sure that your tubes don't get clogged. If they do get clogged, maybe you just need a little fiber. Optic cable. You know what I mean. Right? Okay.
It's a series of tubes.
Yes, it is. Keep those tubes clear and remember until next week.
Tubes.
The doctor is out.
Tubes. Tangled up tubes. I just the other day got internet was sent by my staff at 10 o'clock in the morning on Friday. I got it yesterday. Tangled up tubes. Because you got tangled up with all these things that are going on the internet commercially. I think it's absolutely essential to provide streaming stuff going on.